But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell. And as usual, I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. Welcome to Playing with Fire, Easter edition.
I know, yeah, it's coming up quick, right? Like today.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you know, as I get older, it's probably the same for everybody, but as I get older, time seems to spin a lot faster than it used to, you know? I remember waiting to get out of school and, you know, I'd look at the clock and it was like 9:30. Then I'd look at the clock and it was 8:30. You know, it seemed to be going backwards. Now it's just, we're at warp speed. You know, it's crazy.
It is. And, you know, we talk about Easter and usually family. But yes, as we get older, it definitely seems that time is fleeing and passing us very quickly.
Yeah, you don't have enough time in a day to do everything you want to do. It's like, I need an extra 3 or 4 hours, you know.
For sure. And I go back to my newfound prophecy, which is, again, you have to appreciate what you have at the moment. You know, you can't do everything all at once, but, you know, try to get things done because, you know, you're not really never sure if the people you want to do something with are going to be there tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I guess they call that bucket list stuff, right? You got to get it all out of the way. I need to write a novel and then build a bridge, you know.
Bridges. What about that bridge?
I know, you imagine that.
Fortunately, it went down overnight.
Yeah, like
but,
I mean, two
in the morning. Can you imagine bumping a bumper traffic and something like that goes down?
No, I think they're still looking for 7 people or something like that.
And more than that, this I don't understand. So I believe it was on Wednesday of last week.
Mm-hmm.
There was a rally in Massapequa. Apparently, I guess it was Monday night.
Yeah.
A police officer had pulled somebody over for a traffic infraction and ended up being shot and killed.
I saw that, yeah.
And it's really weird.
That was in Far Rockaway, I think.
It was in Far Rockaway. Apparently, the driver of the vehicle wasn't the shooter. I believe it was the person.
Yeah, the passenger was, yeah.
One of them was a lifetime criminal, like 22 times arrested and whatever.
Yeah, well, the 23rd is the charm. That's when they finally put you away.
And the other guy was five cases or whatever. But, I mean, bail reform definitely probably needed to be reviewed because from the studies that I've read, it was biased against the black and brown community as compared to the Caucasians. Or white people. I think there's got to be some sort of middle ground because, you know, it's terrible if it's not the shootings. And apparently in the last week, there's been a tremendous amount of shootings in the tri-state. It's home burglaries and all sorts of things like that. And it's really tragic. But with this shooting, I always... When I'm talking to law enforcement and people in the community around regarding police, I say a police officer is just in a terrible circumstance and situation because how many people have tinted windows?
Mm-hmm.
And when a police officer goes up to a vehicle and the window goes down, he does not know what he's facing.
Yeah, well, that's why they outlawed it. You can only go a certain amount of darkness
but
or something.
At the same time, it's not obeyed. It's not worth the prudence of pulling people over left and right. And because there is a gauge that they use.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it starts, at the retail level, the body shops or the car accessory places that don't follow protocol and do this. But again, I know that from being with some people that carry guns, that if they get pulled over in a normal circumstance.
Yeah.
Both hands on the steering wheel.
Oh yeah.
And the window goes down. The window goes down. Both hands on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And they will say, you know, I'm carrying. But there's a clear window. You know.
It's a weird balance to try and strike. You know, I mean, we're very good at making laws in this country. We're really bad at enforcing them. You know. They always say, we need a new law. And it's all these idiots do down here is make new laws. They don't enforce the ones that are on the books. They just make new ones, you know what I mean? And then don't enforce them. I have one of my dear friends in the world, Mark Walters, who's a guy I went to college with, and we're still friends after all these years. He's a black kid, grew up in the Bronx, you know, kind of a hellhole area. His father died when he was young, single mom, raising a bunch of kids. And he's one of the hardest working, funniest, most personable people you'd ever meet in your life, you know. And he's told me stories where he got, especially one story, we got pulled over with a cop, gave him a real hard time, and it was only because of the color of his skin. And so I know that goes on, you know what I mean? I had a black uncle years ago who married my father's sister back in the 40s, which was, you know, unusual for that time, you know, Uncle George. And Uncle George told me stories about what was going on in the South. I mean, so, you know, racism's real, it's around. But, I mean, we're so far away from the 20s and the 30s now, you know, and you just like to believe that it's getting better all the time. But you have people that are kind of invested in racism as almost an industry, you know, the Al Sharptons of the world, those people that kind of fire up people and they get like immunity from the law for some reason. I mean, he was involved in his riots and, you know, in Harlem and stuff, and, you know, people died. And for some reason, he just, Al is immune. I mean, he just keeps walking through life with, you know, his ass slicked back, his newfound body, and nobody ever bothers him. I mean, he owes taxes. Yeah. He's, you know, been involved in riots, and no problem.
Well, at any rate, again, as our listeners hopefully gather with family and friends to celebrate Easter, I hope everybody keeps in mind police officer Diller, I believe his name was, from Massapequa. Grew up in Franklin Square, married with a young child, and rumor has it she might be pregnant.
Yeah, the kid's 1 year old, I think.
Yeah,
you know?
And the one in the can.
You know.
So our thoughts go out to you, and it's been a couple of crazy days because firefighters and police officers very much support each other, and I'm led to believe there's an excess of 40,000 uniformed cops and firefighters that will be in Massapequa, where I think it's at St. Rhodes.
Yeah.
To celebrate the life of somebody taken way too
early of good guys.
In the service to community.
You know, I'm going to bring this back to restaurants. If watch this pirouette, Stu. How are we going to get this back to restaurants? But Here's what irks me about all this stuff more than anything. If you come into my bar and you're drunk, right, and you're able to say Budweiser or Bud, what do you have? Can I get you something, sir? Yeah, Bud. That's all you have to say to get served. Now, the bartender has to make an instant, you know, evaluation of your level of sobriety, right, which a doctor couldn't do at that point, right? So now you leave there. Maybe you had 15 drinks someplace else. You want a nightcap. You come to me. You order a Bud. You go out. You kill somebody. I'm responsible as the owner of that restaurant for serving somebody or over-serving somebody, and I can be sued for that death. Meanwhile, you got a parole board that lets these criminals out. Oh, yeah, he's fine. He's done his 3 years, whatever. Yeah, put him back out there for the 27th time. And now he kills a cop and, oops, the system failed, you know. Yeah, the system failed because you're not paying attention. I mean, I don't know why we coddle these people so much.
Well, it's real interesting. Again, not to make this a whole political and a show. Again, it's Easter Sunday, and again, we should...
That's why I pivoted to restaurants.
But I went to a... like a civic association meeting recently.
Yeah.
And it was, they were reviewing a hate crime incident regarding religion. And they were talking about, you know, how do you rehabilitate the person that committed the crime? And it was actually a high school student. And when they did the research, they found out that, you know, it was like hereditary.
Oh, it's learn it at home.
The student grew up in this environment that just set his mind into this mentality. So ultimately, when they were talking about how to navigate through rehabilitation and change, they said the unfortunate part or the difficult part of this thing is the person that committed the crime didn't realize what he was doing. He was living his life as he was brought up. But as in anything in life, there's consequences to every action. But he didn't understand what he was doing was wrong. I mean, I guess it's like bullying in a sense.
Yeah.
Or just a detour from that. But
It's hard to be 20 years old or 17 years old. He was 16 in high school. Let's say he's a high school kid, 16. It's hard to be 16 years old and not know that saying the N-word's a bad idea.
Well,
you know?
Yes. And what was also interesting, because they had parole officers at this meeting, and they were talking, and they also were concerned that a 16 or 17 year old that commits a crime, they don't want his life to be over,
right?
So they need to reschool and just open the person's mind to understand, and they came up with some interesting young people's jury.
Yeah.
They would have to come to these classes, but they had trials by jury of peers.
Right, right.
And so people would get more aware of circumstances. But it's so interesting because, you know, you were talking about the 30s and the 40s and you watch the, old TV shows or whatever, and somebody did something wrong. They'd give him a crack on the head with the nightstick. And that was supposed to be a lesson.
Yeah.
Obviously that's not the way to get things done. And there's a lot of effort today to try to remedy things. But we really are in a strange time. There's such diversity in communities. Even just on presidential politics.
I don't know if people care so much about it. I mean, I've always said that diversity makes us diverse, you know, which is great. It's fine. Cool. You know what I mean?
I actually didn't mean diverse. I meant divided.
Oh, divided. Yeah, for
you
sure.
Again, there's just so much. People have too much passion for some of these crazy things, presidential election. Middle East.
Yeah, the politicians divide everybody.
Again, there's nothing wrong with speaking your mind, but, you know, hopefully you do it in a way that you can get your opinion out there without hurting somebody.
Yeah. Have a right to be a jerk in this country, you know, if you want. I mean, and that's the whole First Amendment thing, which, you know, they're trying to cancel people for their thoughts or whatever. You know, it's the whole thing's crazy. I mean, you got people saying men can have babies. I mean, what? I mean, I think the biggest problem in America now, this is my last statement on this whole thing. The biggest problem in America is the death of truth. There's no truth anymore, you know? I mean, everybody's, you know, you have to force yourself to look at an elephant and call it an octopus,
No, but that's true. And then I guess we should get back to what
we're here.
Mission statement is on Playing with Fire. But AI, you talk about, I guess when we were in school, you had footnotes you backed up a statement with
the proof.
The proof. In today's world, unfortunately, most people believe everything they see on the internet.
Sure.
Now, it's the same system needs to be there where you sort of do some fact checking or whatever. At any rate, bringing it back home, again, it's a holiday. Hopefully you have family or friends to celebrate with. Give them a hug. Enjoy them. Even craziness is a good thing to build memories.
Yeah, well, I think that the antidote for political division or social division is social coming together. And what's better for that than dinner and food and restaurants or home or whatever, I've, you know, said it a thousand times. It's hard to be mad at somebody who's feeding you, you know.
There you go.
So, you know, break bread. I mean, you know, and that's where, I think that's where a lot of discussion takes place, you know, good and bad for sure. But, you know, I remember the dinner table when I was growing up was kind of sacrosanct. I mean, I had to be home by a certain time, and we always ate dinner together as a family. And you know, my family had as many screwed up problems as everybody else's. But you kind of got it all worked out around dinner, you know, because everybody's scattered after that. You know, you go into your room, you're doing your homework, you're going outside to play, whatever.
Well, again,
and we don't see much of that anymore.
No, and that's very interesting. When I was up in school, I attended some sort of like, it was a religious dinner. It was Chabad, which is Jewish community. But they hosted a Sabbath dinner. But they said something that was very interesting, and it's apropos to what you just said, which is in today's world, everybody's doing their own thing. The traditional dinner doesn't always happen the way it did.
Sure.
I mean, you and I both grew up. Dad came home 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whatever.
It was Leave It to Beaver, you know.
You sat down and you had probably a full meal.
Sure.
You might have a soup. You might have a salad. You had a main course. You might have dessert. Your mom probably wanted you to drink milk so that you were healthy. That's not there today.
No.
I use Kerry as an example. They're never around. Everybody's doing their own thing.
Sure.
But she was a little innovative, and she made breakfast the time for family togetherness. So
that's
like,
a good thought. Yeah.
And for a birthday, like, again, everybody might be all over the place. They'd have the birthday cake in the morning.
In the morning, yeah.
Because everybody was there before they went to school.
Sure,
or work
or
whatever.
Yeah. It's a good thought.
So everybody's got their own means of getting through.
Pulling
things.
It off, yeah.
But family, again, as crazy as it could be or is, again, it's what makes you. And again, here we are on Easter Sunday. Give us some food tips. I mean, is Easter a restaurant celebration, or is it more home?
No, it's a big day.
And then tell me, who invented the spiral ham?
I don't, you know, somebody with a sharp knife, you know what I mean? you know, it's funny. I remember Easter, I want to say it was either 1969 or 1970. You know, the further I get away from that date, the harder it is to remember. But I remember we had like 3 feet of snow, and I was working in a restaurant at the time with Shorty.
I was about 13 years old, so that had to be in...
I think it was 70.
1970.
Yeah, 70.
1970, just like you said.
And I remember I was, you know, dating, whatever you do in high school, whatever you call it, going out with, steady or whatever. And my girlfriend, who actually became my wife and then my ex-wife, thankfully, on both occasions, I'm glad I married her. I'm glad I didn't. We're friends, so I can say it. But her father was giving me a lift to work, you know, and because I was going in. I mean, it's 3 feet of snow. He's got this Cadillac. He's swerving all over the road trying to get me to work, right? And I get there, and the guy says, "Go home. What are you out of your mind? You know, you don't want to show up, you know." And we must have had 400 reservations.
That was a crazy day because my cousin's bar mitzvah was that day. And when we went into the party, it was at Monty's in Hempstead, Rockville Center area.
Yeah.
But when we went in, it was fine. You know, the women were in their stilettos and all that.
Yeah, sure.
And you came out, it was like up to your knee, if I remember correctly.
It was a crazy storm, you know. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, years ago, Easter started to become a real busy restaurant day. And it's held true. I mean, we have at the club, I probably have 250, 300 reservations, something 200, whatever it is. And it's a lot, you know, whatever it is. And the restaurants do pretty well on Easter, you know. And I think it gets back to what we were saying about, you know, in my grandmother's generation cooked. They all cooked, right? And they learned from, my great-grandmother was still alive until I was 13 years old. So I had the benefit of, you know, three generations of women there. You know, I had my mother, my grandmother, and my great-grandmother. And my great-grandmother taught my grandmother how to cook. My grandmother, on my father's side, tried to do it with my mother, but, you know, my mother was English, so it was a hopeless case there, you know. Her mother didn't, you know, her idea of Sunday dinner was, you know, roast a beef and put it out on the table and hack a piece off if you want it, you know. But But those women cooked. I mean, my mother tried. I mean, she had six kids. They didn't have a lot of money. My father was a city cop and a fireman, you know. And, you know, she did the best she could. Our generation, not so much, you know. Our generation makes reservations, takeout, you know, bagel stores.
Well, I gotta
you have
tell
all
you,
this convenience around you.
I'm a little out of sorts, and I say this facetiously, because this is my first Easter without Boston Market being on Long Island.
Uh-oh. What are you going to do?
I'm going to have some real food. It's funny.
Good
when you
choice.
Talk about these family gatherings, I was at a Christmas gathering with Carrie and her family,
yeah.
And her brothers and sisters were reminiscing. And when Mom put like a roast out, they fought for what they called the blood gravy.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
So there would be a loaf of bread and everybody would be
dunking,
dipping into the...
Sure. You know, it's funny. On my Jewish friends, I mean, Easter's completely different than Christmas. Christmas, you're screwed. Everything's closed. It's Chinese food in a movie, right? But Easter, you're good. You're open, you know.
Well,
so.
It's different today. It used to be, just like you said, Christmas Eve, nothing going
nothing.
On.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
Nothing going on. And Christmas Day, pretty much also. Today, a lot of the stores are open, although everybody's revisiting things. The thing about Black Friday has
yeah.
changed or whatever.
Sure.
A lot of stores are closed again.
Well, we came from a generation. Remember, most of the stores were closed on Sunday when I was growing up. Roosevelt
yeah.
Field was shut down completely, you know. And I remember when they were going to open it up, and they started opening stores on Sunday. Yeah, you know, the religious side was going, hey, you can't do that. It's a day of rest or whatever. And the commercial side was saying, hey, we need another day of business.
Boy, you really know how to spark conversation.
Well, I have a big mouth.
Because when you were just talking about stores being open on Sunday, everybody takes it for granted that stores were open, and I don't have a clear enough vision of it to know if, like, supermarkets were regularly open. It was probably food places were probably regularly open.
I don't clearly remember that, but I don't think so.
But I know that there was, like, Times Square store or something similar to that thing. When they did open on Sundays, it was like roped off certain areas.
Oh, yeah.
It was really weird. And that actually makes me think of COVID when, you know, certain stores were allowed to be open and others weren't.
Well, that was all political,
but,
too.
But also, when we grew up, liquor stores, I don't believe, were open on Sunday.
They
or
weren't.
Or
and,
it was until afternoon or something.
Yeah, it was noon. It was after church. You know?
Well, liquor stores might have been closed. Maybe beer sales were.
No, you couldn't buy alcohol until 12 o'clock. And I remember that clearly because I'm in the business. You know, election day, they wouldn't let you. They wouldn't sell liquor until after, which you were probably better off having a drink, you know. But you wouldn't sell liquor until after the polls closed.
So again, this is an Easter talk, but again, you spark conversation. So I just read that New York State is talking about allowing supermarkets to carry wine and liquor,
yeah, yeah.
Which happens all across the country. But I'm led to believe it's because of chain stores like Wegmans and
right.
others like that that are trying to get this done. And in the article that I read, the editorial it might have been, they were talking about the days of the mama papa liquor store
right.
are probably going to disappear, and people's jobs and things like that. And I look forward actually to seeing if we can get Stu Leonard to share his thoughts
comment
on something like this, because
I got a feeling I know what they are.
but he's a liquor store owner,
yeah.
and he's a grocery
yes.
store owner.
Yeah.
So I wonder what his thought is on that.
Yeah, well, he could just move his stuff into the other. You know, I mean, if you go to Florida, like I spend a week in Florida every year in the winter playing golf, and you know, of course, we have to stock up a little bit, you know. So when I get there, it you know, most of my wine sales are in a department store. Well, I mean, there's a couple of good wine shops down there.
Yeah.
And they carry more serious stuff, so you're better off.
Well,
but
Total Wine is all over.
Oh,
and
Total
that's
Wine
the,
is nuts.
The craziest place, in a good way.
Yeah.
In a good way and a bad way. I mean, they do have some knowledgeable salespeople, but you don't have the intimacy of a Stu Leonard's on a smaller scale. But I was just curious, and you might have the insight, like, in the old days, there were a lot of 24/7 supermarkets here on Long Island. So, like Publix down in Florida, where they do serve alcohol. I don't know. I guess they serve wine and alcohol.
Yeah, they do.
But I don't know if those stores are open 24/7. And if they are, if they're allowed to serve or sell liquor 24/7.
I don't know. I have no idea. I know that, you know, alcohol was restricted when I was coming up in the restaurant business.
Yeah,
in
Prohibition.
We couldn't, you know, if you opened on Sunday, you couldn't sell a drink until after 12 o'clock. And on election day, you couldn't serve a drink until the polls closed, which, again, I thought was counterproductive. You're better off with a, you know, I think you're better off drunk at the polls than sober.
And at the same time, I get people, young people, saying that they can go fight for their country, but yet not old enough to drink.
Well, you know, I have two sides to that argument. I mean, you know, you're not going to get, the older you get, the less likely you want to go fight for your country. You know, it's easier to rev up an 18-year-old macho kid than it is a 45-year-old who says, you know what, you know, General, you go in first and I'll be right behind you, you know, kind of thing. I have a friend who was in Vietnam, and you know, he was in Marines, right? And the Marines, you know, we never retreat, you know. He goes, yeah, we never retreated, but sometimes we advance in some strange directions, you know. We advance behind us. He goes, we backed up in one battle so far, we bumped into a colonel or something, you know. I was like crying, I was laughing so hard. But, you know, at the same point, you know, you're looking at these kids, you're sending these kids into these meat grinders. It's like, what are you doing, you know? Can't we just figure this out? I mean, we're a couple of thousand years into this human, you know, being thing. You can't just figure it out. I mean, so you want to worship them? Go ahead, you know, who cares, you know? I got to do that too, you know? It's just, relax, let's have a meal, get along, you know? But they can't do it. They just can't do it.
So here we are, Sunday morning, Easter Sunday. I guess they still have the Easter parade when we get out. I guess maybe it will still be going on when we get out of the studio today. I guess in the old days, like, people walk down Fifth Avenue in their Easter bonnets and dressed up.
With all the frills upon it.
To say that, it was interesting. There was a big sale at K&G. It's a clothing store here in Farmingdale. And it was crazy busy last weekend. And I have to assume it was, they had a sale, but it was, people still had the mentality of
gussy up a little bit,
dressed up for Easter. But again, here we are, Easter Sunday. Give us some thoughts on it. If you forgot about getting something or bringing something to your friend or family for dinner, or if you forgot to do your sides and you're serving.
Yeah.
Give us some Easter food insight.
Well, I think if you're in a panic going to somebody's house and you were dim-witted enough not to get it in advance, I think, I always think wine and cheese, you know. Excuse me, it's easy to find, you know. Bottle of wine's great, you know, bring it over. Some cheese is great before and or after a meal. So those are kind of things. Chocolate's always great, you know.
And when you talk about a cheese board or something.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're planning an event, actually, the radio station, to work with one of our clients, Rally Motors, and they said there's a grazing table, and it's an assortment of cheeses and spreads. What are your thoughts on, you know, like eggplant spread and this and that?
Well, I wasn't invited to cater that party, so I'm not telling you. It's, you know, my I'm sounding like a complainer.
Listen, you just hit a sore point because, you know, I thought it would be really nice to celebrate my birthday over at your club.
Yeah.
And you the next week you came with a contract that would
just put up the 50 grand and, you know, you can get it. You can have dinner that night. Well, you know, the problem I see, the thing I see when I go to most catered events, weddings/fundraisers or whatever, is that they'll do a cheese table or cheese board, and they use, like, you know, commercial Swiss cheese and, you know, a bad cheddar, and there's so much great cheese out there. Could you just shoot the lock off your safety deposit box and spend a little money? Charge us more, you know, whatever. But, you know, when I look at a cheese board that's not thought about, it's like I don't need a little square piece of Swiss cheese with a half a hole in it, right? So why don't you get a nice Manchego? How about a Brie? How about a Camembert? How about Beemster? How about an aged Gouda like that, or something, you know, a real interesting blue cheese?
Is it Brie that they serve sometimes with the baked Brie with
jam? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so much great cheese out there. If you go to even a store like, I don't do the commercial shopping. What's the name of that? Whole Foods. You go to Whole Foods, they have a pretty good cheese section there. You know, you can go in and find some stuff. You know, commercially for us, for caterers and stuff. I mean, obviously, I just make a call. This stuff shows up at the back door.
Well, I've talked about it before. I frequented the cheese shop in Rockville Center.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it's like a kid going into a candy store.
Yeah, but the place stinks.
They're just so nice. They offer samples and you could, when I'm trying to figure out what I want. But, oh, my God, I wish that was local. Because they also do sandwiches, but you know,
you
can get a baguette with a nice cheese and freshly sliced, like real turkey or some prosciutto or whatever. Oh my! I mean, it makes me drool.
Oh, cheese is like God's gift to the rest of us. You know, I mean, and you know, who'd have thought it? But you know, some guy crossing the desert with a camel and a thing full of milk, and you know, no refrigeration for 3 days, opens it up. What the hell am I going to do with this now? I'll eat it. You know. It's just a fabulous, fabulous thing to have.
And I meant to give this to you to sample. I was at Stu Leonard's the other day, and they have a pretty decent cheese selection. I think they called it a steakhouse cheddar.
Okay.
And what it was a cheddar cheese that had like sautéed onion.
Oh, really?
In it.
Yeah.
Which was interesting, and the deli guy was saying, you don't understand. Like, you take this and you put it on like a roast beef sandwich and melt it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, voila.
Voila. Well, you know, I think sometimes, you know, we as food people try a little too hard. Sometimes, great cheddar to me is one of the best cheeses out there. You know, real English cheddar or farmhouse, Vermont farmhouse cheddar. Great flavor, and for me, the sharper the better. I mean, to do the non-sharp cheese is kind of like it's too vanilla.
But I always get a kick also, American cheese, cheddar cheese, you know, do you want white or yellow? And I never really understood if there really is a difference.
There's dye in one of them, you know. American cheese to me isn't cheese. Most of them are made by the 3M plastic company or something.
Well, yeah,
you know?
We talked about that. The packaged stuff that you get in individually wrapped is ridiculous. Even Velveeta is, like, ridiculous. But I think you said there's a recipe that you use Velveeta for or something, I thought once.
I use some Velveeta in the cheese sauce that I make for macaroni and cheese. You know, Velveeta is basically a science project. You know, it's a... It is what it is.
I remember when I was in college, they said, like, you need to use, like, hydrochloric acid to clean the pots that they make that stuff for in the factory.
I don't know. You know, you go back to what we were talking about, quality cheeses. I mean, there's some cheeses out there. I remember my great-grandmother, who I was just talking about before, used to eat Limburger. And Limburger cheese smells like the worst locker room you've ever been in your life. I mean, it's hideous, you know. And she would, you know, try it. Are you out of your mind? I mean, it smells like that for a reason. It's a warning. You know what I mean? It's like it's an air raid siren for your nose, you know.
So this discussion is bringing back memories.
Bizarre
when
also.
When I went to school up in Syracuse, one of my buddies who came from my hometown, which was Oceanside, father was a cheese proprietor.
Was he?
Stu Alper. And again, if any of our listeners know the whereabouts of Stu Alper, send us an email at fire@whli.com. fire@whli.com.
Where are you, Stu? the goat cheeses, too. You know, getting back to bring in some stuff over that you forgot to, you know, if you forgot your invitation. You know, goat cheeses are a great way to go because there's so many. You know, goat cheese is almost like Riesling. You know, can go from really dry. Riesling go from really dry to really sweet. Goat cheeses are the same way. You have mild ones like, you know, Chev, and then you can go all the way the other end to feta, which is really sharp. You know, and it's all goat's milk cheese, Manchego, all of that.
But some of the goat cheese are they usually grated like
this hard goat cheese. You can find
so
hard
like
goat
as
cheese.
A bar you would get.
Yeah, you get. I mean, Manchego's kind of like that. It's a little hard. But yeah, there's grating goat cheese for sure. You know, aged goat cheeses and stuff that are really
because
good.
I think more of like when you get a salad and there's crumbled
goat cheese. Yeah,
with
well, that's a softer one.
And a
Yeah, cranberry or something. Yeah, yeah. That's kind of a softer goat cheese.
Oh, so there's harder goat cheese.
Yes, you can get hard goat cheese, aged goat cheese that's almost like Parmesan, where you can grate it on a grater, you know, and it has a sharper flavor, tends to anyway. But there's so many. I mean, there was a guy that used to come into the restaurant all the time. Al, I can't remember his last name, and he had all these great cheeses from Wisconsin and Minnesota. They had this cave age Cardona. I think it was a cow's milk cheese. I'm pretty sure it was. It was just, oh my God. I couldn't buy it anymore because I was eating most of it. You know what I mean? I'm supposed to be. It was expensive too. I'm supposed to be selling this thing, and I'm in the back there with a piece of bread hacking off.
Yeah, I have a neighbor hunk. That a good friend. Their daughter goes to school in Wisconsin, and all they rave about is how they. Like contraband, bringing all this cheese back to New York.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you get the Green Bay Packers with the cheeses, thing. Yeah,
yeah.
that's where they make a lot of it. It's a dairy place up there. And then I think chocolates are always good to bring too to a house. You know, I mean, there's plenty of that around. You can go get Godiva, or some good chocolate. You know, what's the Swiss maker? I can't think of his name.
Lind.
Lind, yeah. Those are great. Bottle of wine is great. And now. Getting into the food thing, which we should probably do. We're halfway through the show. We're talking about, Al Sharpton and whatever. But I think that, this time, I mean, traditionally, kind of Easter was, in my house was always lamb. And I think that's because this is, the lamb season. It's when the lambs are slaughtered. And, asparagus season's hot right now. Fiddlehead ferns, ramps. Interesting things that you might not normally use. Fiddlehead ferns are kind of more of a decorative thing than they are really a flavor thing. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They look like these little green curls. They look like, years ago.
And what is this called?
Fiddlehead fern.
Fiddlehead
fern. And they're only around for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks a year. Yeah, maybe a little longer, maybe a month. But, yeah, they're kind of fun. I like them in a mix of vegetables. If I saute some like corn and maybe carrots or tomato or whatever and the fiddleheads in there, by themselves, they don't really have a lot of flavor. Like I said, they're just unique looking and kind of fun. But asparagus is at the height of its season this time of year in, April through probably June. You know, the white asparagus are around now. White and green is a good mix. But a lot of times, I'll serve asparagus as a appetizer, a salad, just asparagus with maybe a little mustard dressing and some potatoes.
I know in the vegetable aisle in supermarkets, they many times have it's probably not pickled, but it's probably like asparagus, like in an oil or something.
Oh yeah.
Or a saline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A brine.
Yeah, brine. Yeah, my mother used to buy the canned ones, which, again, she's English. It's not her fault, And they were horrendous. And were too, they were too soft, and I didn't like them much.
That being said, I have no problem buying, like, hearts of palm. I guess it comes either in a can or a jar.
Yeah, you can get them fresh now. I've seen them fresh here, actually.
That really adds zest to a salad to me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, all that stuff is good. I mean, any kind of vegetable, obviously, is good for you. But there's something about asparagus that has that... that certain enzyme in it or whatever,
yeah,
you know.
The stuff that makes my pee smell.
That's, as you so eloquently put it, yes.
But I want to know how it works so fast.
But, somebody in the medical profession once told me, it's a small percentage of people that can actually smell that. Like 30% of the population, 70% have no idea. I'm one of the 30. I get it right away, I eat a lot of asparagus because I use them, pretty frequently, but... Anyway.
And what's your favorite way of preparing asparagus?
Well, I think there's two things that are critically important to me for asparagus. One is three things. One is you got to break the stem off, And you can just, hold it, snap. It'll snap naturally where it's useless, Mm-hmm. Number two is you got to peel it a little bit because that's what's going to give you that really green, beautiful color, And three is you have to shock it. You have to poach it and shock it, right? I only poach asparagus for maybe 40 seconds, 45 seconds, and then right into, boiling water, poach it 45 seconds, and then right into an ice bath to cool it down, and that'll keep the color. At that point, you can do what you want with them. You can grill them, you can roast them, you can, saute them if you want, you can slice them, put them in a salad, whatever you want to do. But those are the three things I think you need to do.
For most of those that you just mentioned, it would be drizzling it with some olive oil or something, right?
Well, yeah, or a dressing, you know, a vinaigrette, you know.
A little salt, pepper, olive oil.
I tend to use a mustard vinaigrette on those.
Interesting.
And some tiny boiled potatoes, you know, with that salad and maybe a poached egg, you know, which is always kind of fun to, you know, hit the egg and let the yolk drip off. It makes it almost kind of a sauce with your dressing. It kind of it kind of mollifies that vinaigrette taste, that the sharpness of the vinegar with the richness of the egg yolk. Yeah, I'm starting to sound like Guy Fieri here, but or Fieri, as he says. But it kind of mixes well together. And you know, same thing with mushrooms. If you take, you know, we're in a good time for mushrooms now. Morels are around, you know, this time of year. Big Bluefoot oyster mushrooms are around. You can take a melange of different mushrooms, saute them up, you know, put them on a little bed of, you know, bib lettuce or something like that. And then, you know, I tend to use like a sherry vinaigrette.
Wait, that's an interesting thought. I never thought of commingling a variety of mushrooms in a recipe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, each one has a little bit of a different flavor. I mean, shiitakes taste different to me than the, you know, cremini mushrooms, which are kind of bland.
Well, the button.
The morels are great because morels have all those little holes in them. They look like Alice in Wonderland, the little conical mushrooms that you see in Alice in Wonderland. And they have a bunch of holes in them, which, A, is a problem and a blessing at the same time because you really have to wash them. You got to tap them and get some of the sand. Sometimes the sand or dirt in there and get that out. But once you get that out, those holes hold all the sauce of the vinaigrette or whatever you're using. So when you bite them, it's like a sponge, you know, soaking up all that saucy goodness, as they say, you know. Yeah, fun stuff. Green beans, same thing. Green beans are, this time of year, you know, it's fun to take a little bit of, you know, like ricotta cheese and flavor it with basil or flavor it with lemon or orange or something like that, a little orange zest. Spread that on the bottom of your plate. So saute some green beans on top of that and shave some Parmesan cheese on it or some sharp, you know, hard goat cheese, which would be fun on that. Just liven up the, you know, think of vegetables. Think of ways of livening it up. I mean, it's, you know, most of us just, you know, when we're cooking at home, you know, your mom will go, okay, we got asparagus, and she'll cook asparagus
so
and put
you,
it out.
My mind wanders. Brussels sprouts,
yeah.
not this season.
It's
right
a
now,
fall thing.
But people are doing maple syrup and bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that pair with asparagus?
What, maple syrup?
And bacon crumbs,
I guess bacon, you know, bacon's good on anything. You put bacon on cornflakes and it's, you know, fabulous. but I don't know about the maple syrup. Asparagus have a different kind of flavor than Brussels sprouts, you know. They don't need as much help, I think. And I think that milder is probably not the right word if you're going to use a vinaigrette. But, you know, different flavors, dressing. I don't think adding, you know, maple syrup on anything, honestly. For me, it's too sweet for me, even for Brussels sprouts. I mean, if I was going to add something on the sweeter side, and this is going to sound odd to some people out there, I would use a gorgonzola or something, like a cheese that has a little more.
So it was mentioned to me this past week that some chefs use lemon as almost like a salt.
Salt, yeah. Well, that's for people who can't, generally for people who can't tolerate salt. You know, lemon brightens things up.
Because in my medieval cooking, I'll use cheese to add some zest to a soup. If I have a soup that I might get a low sodium soup or something because I'm trying to make believe I'm healthy.
Yeah.
I'll put some grated Romano or pecorino or even some crumbled feta.
Right.
And I find that it livens it up.
Well, there's salt in, you know, especially feta. I mean, feta can be salty, you know. I think salt is, you know, salt's a chemical. Used moderately, I think we'll all be fine. Excessively, obviously, it's going to raise your blood pressure and do things you don't want it to do. But salt, you know, salt really doesn't do anything for the flavor of it. Salt just basically perks up your buds. That's what it does. It kind of makes your taste buds stand up and go, I'm ready, you know, kind of thing. Hey, come on, you know. But I think that salt, I try to teach my kids, you know, my kids in the kitchen, that salt is like a mountain, you know. You can go up halfway and it's really not you know, kind of summiting the hill, or hilling the summit or whatever it is, you know, and then you go a little further and it gets better and you get to the top of the mountain and it's perfect. And then a little too much, you start to decline and it goes right into, you know, it goes sideways after a while. Too much salt, obviously, is terrible. And it's everybody else's opinion, too. I mean, you know, some people need more, some people need less. You know, I try and go for general acceptability, but also, you know, I season my food the way I want to eat it. Because that's what people do. I mean, you would do the same thing, right? So this is the way I serve it. If it's too salty for you, well, sorry about that. But if it's not salty enough, well, sorry about that.
So I'm curious. I know when we talk about soup, many times you're talking about mushroom and barley from Ben's. Are you a split pea guy?
Yeah, I love soup, man. You know, any kind of soup. I haven't found one I don't like, you know.
You know, I had a real treat recently. It was St. Patrick's Day, so most of the Irish places, first of all, you couldn't get in.
Yeah,
you know,
of course,
and for,
yeah.
And for takeout, it was they weren't taking orders. You had to be there. So I took the path of least resistance, and I went to the diner to get my corned beef and cabbage that night. But getting it at a diner, you get an appetizer. You get the main dish.
Deluxe.
You get
comes with everything, yeah. But
it was funny because one of the choices was matzo ball soup.
A traditional St. Patty's
Day
matzo ball soup.
I thought the split pea would hit home better.
Now, would you eat a green matzo ball?
Well, listen, there were a lot of green bagels.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I must be preparing for St. Patrick's Day all year long because I cleaned out my refrigerator recently.
A lot of green
food
in
there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I actually, it was East Bay Diner in Seaford.
Uh-huh.
And the split pea soup was incredible.
Yeah.
They put some croutons in it.
Nice.
And even though it was in the soup and you had been sitting there a while, it had some crunch.
Some crunch, yeah. Cool.
Which I guess must have meant that it was very crispy when it went in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just
or stale.
Perfect. And as we all know, soup ages that much better.
Sure.
What a feast. It was just, oh my God, it was delightful.
Soup to me is a meal. I mean, you know, soup and crusty French bread and a whole bunch of olive oil, I'm in, man. I don't need anything else. You know, two bowls, I'm good, you know. But that, I always go back to Ben's mushroom barley. You know, I love that stuff. And I was thinking about it last week, and I actually made a beef barley soup for, I was at the club, and they sell pretty well. Especially this time of year, it was a little chilly. Yeah, stick to the ribs food. I mean, you know, you have the barley in there for volume, you know, beef or whatever, or mushrooms, you know, it's just great. You know, and you go to Ben's, and Ben's has that big bowl, and it's almost all barley, you know what I mean? It's like 6 mushrooms, 10 pounds of barley, you know, and then a half a pastrami sandwich if you still, you know, have room. It's great Jewish soul food, you know. But, yeah, soups, I mean, and again, with soups, sky's the limit. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, recipes out there that you can follow, but if you can make your own stock, that's really the key to soup. That and reduction. You know, I have people tell me all the time, I've never tasted, you know, soups like yours. I said, because we make stocks. You know, people don't do that anymore. I mean, I still make demi-glace, which is almost unheard of in most restaurants. I mean, your finer ones do it. You know, and I have to start off with, I start off with 2 cases of veal bones. And we roast the bones, we roast the vegetables, a whole bunch of aromatics in there. And I boil it, you know, simmer it for 2 days, you know, and then strain it. And, you know, I'll come out with maybe, 8 gallons, 10 gallons of stock. And I reduce that, which means I boil it down till it disappears to about 5 quarts, you know. So I'll take, you know, 8, 10 gallons and bring 5 quarts out of it. And what happens is it naturally, you know, thickens and you have this reduced intense beef veal flavor, you know, in your sauces. And there's also a glycerin kind of texture to it where you know right away if you've tasted sauces that were thickened with roux or cornstarch, you know, and you taste something that was naturally thickened by reduction, there's a huge difference. You can tell right away. And so that's the, you know, that's the thing that I think that, you know, and it's a pain in the neck, honestly, to make stocks. Nice little project on a winter day if you have nothing to do. It's snowing like crazy. You know, get yourself some chicken bones, roast them off, you know, put some vegetables in there, some herbs, you know, thyme, garlic, whatever, and just make yourself a nice broth, you know, and then reduce that down by half. And you can buy those little plastic, you know, 1-quart containers with the top, and it freezes really well. Or you can put them, I know a lot of home cooks, you know, freeze them in ice cube, in the old ice cube trays, mm-hmm. You know, so you only need a little, you know, piece or whatever, you pop one out. It's a great, you know, it's a great pantry item. You know, it's a stock pantry item that you should have. Now, that being said, you know, we all have these busy lives, and, you know, it's not like you have a lot of time. You can go and get chicken stock. Now, chicken broth, you have collagen, makes a low-sodium chicken broth, which is good. And that is some natural ones out there that are really
organic,
good.
Organic.
Yeah, organic.
Actually, it's funny you say that. I was looking, I'm trying to be economical. I had this pea soup from the diner that was excellent. Uh-huh. No issue with it. If anything, it was very bulky,
right.
and I guess it was very flavorful, but meaning it was
thick
and not salty, but seasoned well.
Yeah.
So I figured I would get a
stretch it out a little bit.
Yeah. So I actually, like, Trader Joe's, if you go, they have those milk containers of soup, and
right.
I was hoping to get some split pea soup like that, and they didn't have it. But where I'm going with this is there was a whole section of organic soups,
mm-hmm.
and all in these milk containers.
Like. Yeah, yeah. I was trying to figure out a way to do that. I had this idea I was going to do dressings and stuff, you know, and bottle it differently with a headband on it, you know what I mean, kind of thing, a little mini headband on the top, you know.
I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of my signature thing, and it didn't start out that way. I wear a headband to keep the sweat and the hair out of the food. I mean, it's just a natural mechanical thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, whatever, because my hair used to be very, very long at one time and thick. Now it's short and thin. But anyway, you know, it started out, that's the reason I wore it. It wasn't some fashion statement or anything. And all my customers started bringing me headbands from all over the world. You know, I got an Allman Brothers headband. I got one from Israel. I got one from Paris, you know, kind of thing, which is kind of fun. so why did I bring that? Oh, yeah, because I wanted to, you know, make that on the packaging. You
mm-hmm.
know? I haven't figured out quite how to do it. It's, you know, making soups commercially for resale is a project. I mean, you have to have the Cornell Cooperative Extension involved, and you have to have barcodes, and it's a pain in the neck. And there used to be a woman out on the North Fork that used to do that. I would give her a recipe, and she would make barbecue sauce for me under my own name, you know, and I used it mostly for the restaurants. And then we did a fundraiser for Jerry Hayden, who's a chef out there, a very talented guy who passed away due to ALS a couple years ago. And we each did a recipe of something, and she made these things, and they sold them as a fundraiser for his cause. And I did a red curry sauce, you know, like an Asian red curry sauce. But she's not in business anymore. And then, you know, now I contacted some of these people, but they want you to commit to like 10,000 pieces. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, what if I sell 12? You know what I mean? What am I going to do with a garage full of soup? And, you know, it's not like, I guess I could probably get it in Stu Leonard's because we know Stu. But, you know, I don't see, you know, Stop and Shop picking up my thing and, you know, and running with it. So I didn't do it.
Talking about seasonality, we said Brussels sprouts are not this season.
Yes.
A turnip's like 12 months of the year, or that's more winter too?
You can almost get anything you want anytime now, but it's kind of a fall winter thing.
So if I go to Modern Diner, is that what it's called?
Modern Snack Bar?
Would they have their turnip?
I don't know. I know they, you know, they go crazy around Thanksgiving. They sell, he told me, they sell something like 3,000-4,000 pounds of turnips or something in that week that goes. Because he's the only guy doing it that I know, you know.
So I need to share a story. It was interesting. Sundays, I usually have dinner with my mom, South Shore. She's from Oceanside.
You're a good boy, Stu.
I try. So, you know, I usually call her around 4 o'clock and say, "What? You know, are we having, you know, dinner tonight?" Sure. I said, what would you like to have? Oh, let me figure it out. So this week, she decided she wanted something from Peter's Clam Bar in Island Park.
Yeah.
She wanted a shrimp po' boy.
Really?
Which was a torpedo.
That's impressive, yeah.
Oh, my God. I wasn't familiar. It was like on hero bread.
Yeah.
And it was, I guess, fried shrimp.
Sure.
With cheese. But they put it on a bed of French fries.
Really?
At least they do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like a meal for my mom for a week.
I'm going to go home and carve the poor boy.
But it was really interesting because, again, they it was on the hero bread, a layer of julienne.
Yeah, yeah.
French fries. And
wow.
My mom said, you know, make sure to get me some tartar sauce and some cocktail sauce.
Only accoutrements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But She was in heaven.
You know, I was just in New Orleans recently, and I don't eat those. I'm not a sandwich guy. For some reason, I'm not a bread person. I mean, I love bread. Good bread. You know, I had a focaccia down there in New Orleans at a place called Lillette that was, it was life-changing for me, man. I said, I have to go back and work on this because I make pretty good focaccia, I think. This is so much better than mine. I was like, I gotta figure this out, you know. So I'm doing a lab on focaccia as we speak, you know, at the club. I'm screwing around with different flours and stuff. I'm trying to replicate what I had. It was that good. It was like, I said, who's the chef, man? I gotta get to steal this, you know. But I don't really eat sandwiches. I don't eat po' boys, and you know, like I'll do the local thing in the mornings and in the afternoon, like for lunch. You know, I'll eat alligator if I want, you know, just because it's there, or gumbo, which I love, you know, etouffees, things like that. But then at night, I still want to go to my four-star mm-hmm. places and do that, you know, because that's where a lot of inspiration comes from, you know, other chefs and what they're doing and, you know, how they're treating a certain ingredient or whatever. And, you know, we don't steal anything. We borrow. You know, we borrow things mm-hmm. and we twist them around and kind of give them our own little flair. Some of us do. Some of us flat out steal. You know, I've seen some theft, but it's okay. I mean, you can't copyright food, so...
So I have an interesting scenario coming up. So Easter Sunday meal. So right from here, I'm actually flying down to Florida. And I've said it before, Below Deck is a TV show on Bravo.
Yeah, you've been touting
I'm
that.
I'm having my Easter dinner on a yacht
really?
In West Palm.
Look at you. Oh, my goodness.
And I'm so excited to see if it... is actually as
crazy.
Alluring as I'm dreaming.
I didn't, you know, I don't picture you as a yachtsman. You know, you got to get that. Who's that guy on Gilligan's Island with the hat?
Well, you'll
there?
Laugh. I spent a week trying to, you know, come up with the right yachting outfit.
Yeah, I need a white hat with an anchor and a life preserver on it.
Well, it's just really quick, and because as we end the show, but apparently you can't wear shoes. On the boat for whatever reason.
Deck shoes. You need deck shoes.
Not even deck shoes.
No.
You got to either
gotta go
wear
barefoot.
Socks or go barefoot. So I quickly ran during the week to get a pedicure.
No, you can't be serious.
But I did. But, you know, and then I said, I'm probably not going to be barefoot. I'm going to be wearing socks. I had to find the appropriate socks to go with my outfit.
I love this. How come it's only Korean ladies that do nails?
I only wish that we had social media for the show or a website where I could post something from this event. But it's actually, real quick, being hosted by the owner of Rally Motors, Juliana Terrian.
Uh-huh.
She's doing she's entertaining her
snowbird
customers who are down in Florida.
Right.
Rally has Mercedes, BMW, Lexus, and Acura dealerships up here, North Shore. And again, she's got a lot of customers down in Florida, and she thought it would be pretty cool to have her boat available to some guests. And
nice.
I'm lucky
and
enough to
guess.
Have been included.
Well, listen, if you post a picture of those Tootsies on the... on Facebook, I'll buy you dinner. How's that? I need to see them. Those piggies are ready for market now. All right, with that thought, which I probably won't be able to get out of my head now for the rest of the Easter Sunday, we're going to sign off with Tom's Three Keys to Life. As usual, life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And have a happy Easter, everyone. We will see you next week.
All.
Yeah, there you go.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.